Hello, welcome to the debate on Press TV. I'm your host, Behruz Najafi. The UK government will prorogue or suspend Parliament from the second week of September until October 14, just weeks before the Brexit deadline. Now, British politicians have fiercely attacked the Prime Minister's move. Some of them regard it as outrageous and even a coup against the House. The value of the pound fell sharply against the euro and the dollar, with a no-deal Brexit looming. Johnson's surprise move has a fan in the White House, though. President Trump has praised the British premier and said that, quote, he's exactly what the UK was looking for. Now, where's the UK heading for? What'll become of Brexit? And what's in it for the US? Stay with us and we'll discuss these and more questions with our panelists. First, the latest in the report from London.
Here in the UK, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has called on the Queen to suspend Parliament only days after summer break ends and a mere 2 months before Brexit. Johnson has vowed the UK will leave the European Union on October the 31st, with or without a deal. British critics say his actions undermine democracy as elected MPs are denied vital time to do their job. The suspension of Parliament from the middle of next month would mean MPs losing a number of days at Westminster, during which they could have attempted to legislate against a no-deal Brexit. Asked if he was denying opposition MPs the time to stop a no-deal Brexit, the Prime Minister has said...
Well, that is completely untrue. If you look at what we're doing, we're bringing forward a new legislative programme on crime, on hospitals, making sure that we have the education funding that we need. And there will be ample time on both sides of that crucial October the 17th summit, ample time in Parliament for MPs to debate the EU, to debate Brexit and all the other issues. Ample time.
However, many within the House simply do not agree, and the move has sparked outrage, with several MPs accusing Boris Johnson of acting like a tin pot dictator.
It would be a constitutional outrage if Parliament were prevented from holding the government to account at a time of national crisis, profoundly undemocratic.
Despite often maintaining political neutrality, even the House of Commons Speaker John Bercow weighed in, calling Johnson's proposed suspension a constitutional outrage. On Tuesday, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn met with a coalition of party leaders and senior MPs opposed to a no deal. A cross-party group of around 160 MPs have signed a declaration to support whatever is necessary to stop a no-deal Brexit.
The priority is to prevent a no-deal exit from the European Union because of all the damage it would do to people's jobs, economy, and our relationships with the rest of the world.
The opposition parties could pass legislation to force the Prime Minister to seek a further extension to the Article 50, further delaying Brexit, or, in a more drastic move, table a no-confidence motion in Johnson's government in an attempt at ousting him from office. Unfazed Johnson says he's prepared to take Brexit talks with the European Union down to the very last minute and crash out without a deal if necessary. But only 2 months away from the Brexit deadline, he has proposed drastic changes to the current deal negotiated under Theresa May. Number 10 sources say the Prime Minister's strategy is working and progress is being made with the UK's European partners because the bloc now realises London is serious about leaving on October the 31st. No ifs, no buts.
Okay, that was a report by our correspondent Ahmed Caballo. Now, joining me in this debate tonight will be Derek Conway, journalist and former British MP from London, and also John White, journalist and political commentator from Edinburgh. Good to have both of you, gentlemen. Now, Derek, Boris Johnson's plan has faced harsh attacks by many British politicians. Former Prime Minister John Major has even threatened to go to court to stop the prorogation. Can they stop the process?
I think it's very unlikely, and John Major's caused prorogations when he was Prime Minister. Boris Johnson's not doing anything that hasn't been done before. Everybody's squealing about the timing, and I can understand why. And the timing is very sharp, there's no doubt about it. But Parliament has always prorogued before the Queen's speech. There's nothing unusual in that. Used to be for about a week, sometimes it had been for 2 weeks, principally while they got the Palace of Westminster ready and laid out red carpets and did all those functional things. This time it's round, it's more to do with Mr. Johnson's timing and the European Union. So whatever our individual views about Brexit are and all those other shenanigans, the fact is, constitutionally, this is nothing new, and there are no constitutional experts who are saying this is all appalling and breaking new ground. This is all based on precedent.
Right. Now, John, Boris Johnson's plan will suspend the House, preventing it from sitting until it's too late for the opposition to be able to block a no-deal exit from the EU. And some expect an epic fight between the Prime Minister and the MPs from all sides. What do you expect is going to happen?
Well, this is an unprecedented set of circumstances that we are now facing, and I do have to disagree with my interlocutor there when he says this is entirely constitutional based on precedent. This is entirely unprecedented, because this prorogation is designed with a political purpose in mind. It's not to do with the constitutional, not to do with the usual business of Parliament in advance of the Queen's speech. This is to do with ramming home a hard Brexit on behalf of these extremists, and they are extremists, that are occupying our government at this point in time, on the part of an unelected Prime Minister who has sought and gained the permission of an unelected head of state, the Queen, in order to suspend the elected Parliament, as I say, in order to ram home this hard Brexit, because they know there is no support in the Parliament for it. So this is an unprecedented set of circumstances. There's going to be one almighty fight in Parliament, but even more significantly is the opposition that will be building in the street. Already a spontaneous demonstration at Westminster in London in response to this, under the mantra of stop the coup, has attracted thousands, and I know there are demonstrations taking place up and down the country. So this will only cement and deepen the already already significant polarization that has been wrought in the country as a consequence of this political crisis, which has now been going on for 3 years, and who knows where it will end. But I suggest that there are very real consequences ahead for social peace and social cohesion as a consequence.
Now, Derek, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn says that when MPs return to their Commons next Tuesday, I'm quoting him, the first thing they will do is attempt some legislation to prevent what Johnson is doing, followed by a vote of no confidence at some point. How likely is that to happen?
Well, a motion of no confidence would take precedence over all other business in Parliament. So Mr. Corbyn can put down a motion of confidence on the first day back, and the Speaker would start the debate the next day. So having a motion of confidence is entirely in Mr. Corbyn's hands, or the Liberal leader's hands, whoever wanted to do it. No stop them doing that. I don't suppose anybody would try and do that. The only reason Mr. Corbyn wouldn't do it is if he thought it wouldn't be successful. And at the moment, that's what people are predicting. So you're back to what is this Queen's speech thing? Some of your viewers and listeners might be wondering, what is it? I mean, the Queen doesn't write the speech. It's written by the Prime Minister. It's the programme for the government. It's the Queen reads it out in the House of Lords, tries to look interested, sometimes raises her eyebrows, a bit she's personally not very fond of. And then after that, the House of Lords and the House of Commons start debating its content, which is essentially the legislative programme the government wants to see forward, and things like state visits and one or two trappings of state that go into it. That's voted on at the end of that debate, and the Queen's speech as a vote in Parliament, along with the budget, which is the finance bill that comes before Parliament, those two bits of activity are considered motions of confidence in the government. If you lose the Queen's speech, you're out of government. If you lose the budget, you're out of government. You can lose other things, bits of bills, the widget number 3 bill, the better sewerage bill. Doesn't matter. If you lose that, it has no effect on your standing as a government. But if you lose the vote on the Queen's speech, you're out of government. If you lose the vote on the budget, the finance bill, you're out of government. So there will be an opportunity for Parliament to decide if it wants Mr. Johnson to continue on around about the 19th or 20th of October. The Queen's speech itself is the 14th, but they then debate it for a few days. The complication is, as Mr. White rightly pointed out, is the European Union has a summit on Saturday, the 17th of October, which looks to be the last opportunity for some kind of compromise on the backstop agreement in Northern Ireland. If the European Union blinks and backs off on that hard border, then Mr. Johnson will go back to Parliament and say, this is the deal I've got, it's better than a no deal, it's not what Mrs. May put you, let's have another run at this. They've already rejected it 3 times, maybe this time they'll vote for it. We can't know, nobody really knows the answer. There are no experts at this, because people are all over the place in how they're voting. But there will be one more occasion, at least, when Parliament will get a chance to vote on all this. And then, as Mr. White rightly says, if they can't get a grip of it by the 31st of October, Britain is out of the UK. And it's out of the UK because that's what the law already says. When they passed the withdrawal bill and made it an act, that's what set the timescale. And so Parliament would have to override that act of Parliament, which is what's driving everything. He doesn't need any new legislation for Britain to come out of the European Union. It's already there. And that's the complication that people are facing if they want to stop Britain leaving the European Union. I don't think, and I spent 25 years in Parliament, so I think I've got a reasonable understanding about how it works. I don't think they've got time to stop it.
Now, John, Derek mentioned this a backstop, you know, a thing which is a real bone of contention there and a stumbling block, maybe more than that even. Are you optimistic that it's going to be resolved in any way?
No, I'm not. I'm not optimistic at all. This is going to have grievous consequences, I contend, for peace in Ireland. The Good Friday Agreement, which has maintained an absence of conflict in the north of Ireland since the late 1990s, is now imperiled, and I have no doubt that there is a wing of this Tory establishment and security establishment in Britain that has never reconciled itself to the Good Friday Agreement, who believe that it is a surrender document tantamount to appeasement, and would not be so perturbed at the prospect of British troops making a return to the streets of Belfast and Derry at all. This is what we are dealing with. This is hubristic, and this is the consequences of a British elite, certainly this section of the British elite, that has yet to confront and address its imperialist and colonialist legacy. And this has been internalized by a large section of the British people. This Brexit has been driven by nativism, by xenophobia, by empire nostalgia, and by a brand of British exceptionalism which has succeeded in infecting a sizable section of the predominantly white, predominantly English, deindustrialized working class with false consciousness as to the causes of their plight after three decades of Thatcherism. And until we break from this false consciousness, we will forever be stuck in a vortex of magical thinking which has brought us this hard Brexit. And this Brexit, by the way, will not be the acme of democracy. It will be the subversion of democracy. It is not being driven by, in the interest of the British people, in the interest of democracy, but in the interest of US corporations, in the interest of disaster capitalism. So I'm very worried about the prospects for peace in Ireland. We've become complacent over the three decades that there has been an absence of conflict in Ireland. In fact, it is true to say that there is no peace in Ireland, there is only an absence of conflict. The two are not necessarily the same thing. So to answer to your question, I don't think this will be resolved satisfactorily.
Okay. Now, Derek, according to the British government's own assessment in November, crashing out of the EU without a deal would result in the UK economy being nearly 8% smaller 15 years afterwards. Is that an accurate anticipation in your opinion?
Maybe. I mean, again, nobody knows. People were saying if the British people voted to withdraw from the European Union, then thousands of jobs would be lost within a week, the pound would fall through the floor, and everything would go horribly wrong. That didn't happen. So a lot of people say, well, who do you believe? And it's quite difficult to know. I was one of those who did it all over the place. I, you know, at the very last minute to vote Remain, Leave, or whatever. What I do know is that when you vote, nobody decides for you how you vote. So people are saying, people were misinformed. Well, maybe there are general elections. I've been a candidate in election when I've lost, and I thought they were very badly misinformed not to re-elect me. So, you know, politics, what people vote is what they decide. And, for example, in Ireland, which I think is dangerous, I think John is quite right to highlight the risks ahead in Ireland. But to a large degree, it's in the hands of the people who live on the island of Ireland. If those who live in Northern Ireland want to remain part of the European Union along with ERA and want to have a unified government in Ireland itself, on the island itself, then they will vote for that. People in England aren't going to stop them in any shape or form. Likewise in Scotland, there was a referendum in Scotland, and the Scottish people decided by a clear majority they didn't want to pull out. But if they decided they did, nobody in England was going to stop them. That's why the referendum was held. And so I don't really buy that there's a sort of group of people lurking around in England trying to stop bits of the United Kingdom doing what it wants to do. There's no point of that in this day and age. I think the world of colonialism has probably moved more to business and finance than it has to geography. And it's the financial aspect that worries you. I mean, like many of your viewers, perhaps I've got a young family all at work, and you worry about what the impact will be for them. both staying and leaving. I mean, life is marginally safer and more comfortable if we remain within the European Union. If we're outside the European Union, then they can't blame Brussels for things going wrong. And then it will come down, do they want the sort of economic system that John would argue, or do they want a more capitalist system, which would be my predisposition? Uh-huh. And that's where the argument, we'll no longer be able to say, well, it's all Brussels' uh-huh. fault and those nasty foreigners and what they're doing to us. That excuse uh-huh. will go out the window at the end of October.
All right. Now, John, what about the repercussions and ramifications of UK exiting the European Union without a deal?
Well, we know that there are around 3 million British jobs, UK jobs, that are currently depending on Britain's trade with the EU. So if we leave without a deal, which means leaving the single market, then those jobs would certainly be imperiled. 44% of British exports are to the EU. Those would obviously be imperiled. And supply chains would be imperiled. So there would be a shock to the economy, and the brunt of that shock will be borne by the poorest and the most vulnerable in society, who are already suffering the ravages of 9 years of austerity under successive Tory governments. Constitutionally, this has kicked over a constitutional hornet's nest. 62% of people in Scotland voted to remain in the referendum on the 23rd of June 2016. That translates to every single one of Scotland's 32 local authorities, and as Derek rightly adumbrated, a majority of people in the north of Ireland, 55%, voted to remain also. So, as I say, this has kicked over a constitutional hornet's nest, and I think this will cultivate more support for Scottish independence. And I speak as someone who was opposed to Scottish independence. I campaigned against it, I wrote articles against it in 2014. I now support it based on what is happening today. And so I think I will not be alone in that, changing my position. But Nicola Sturgeon has rightly sounded a warning that if Boris Johnson is capable of suspending the Parliament at Westminster, he's also capable of suspending the Parliament at Holyrood. And he's already made it clear that he will not agree to a second independence referendum in Scotland on the basis of the material change that has taken place since the first referendum in 2014. So this has opened up all sorts of tributaries. Derek has rightly said, we are in unprecedented territory, and it's how we navigate through this storm that will determine how we come out of it at the end. But the effect on social cohesion are already manifestly egregious, and I think it will get worse before it gets better. But don't forget, we've already seen the murder of an MP over this issue. This was Joe Cox, a Labour MP, in the week of the EU referendum in 2016. And I really do fear that this kind of violence could erupt again. I hate to say that. I hate to be a Cassandra in this regard, but I really do fear the way that emotions are running high and the temperature in the country at this current moment in time.
Okay. Now, Derek, this move by Boris Johnson has a very big supporter, and that is President Donald Trump in the U.S. He's given full support to Johnson and promised great trade after Brexit. So what's he cooking?
Well, I think, you know, I've never for a moment want to defend Donald Trump or anything he really says. I suppose at the end of the day, America is a major partner for the United Kingdom, so you just got to sort of suck it up in a way. But, I mean, the way Donald Trump behaves, it must be very hard for anybody to take seriously anything he says. But obviously America is very important to British investment and to British trade. I mean, I think if we've left the European Union on the 31st of October, there undoubtedly will be a hit on our trade with the European Union, with the continent of Europe. But it won't run down to zero. I mean, people from all over the world bring goods into Europe, and Europe exports goods to countries where we don't have any kind of free trade agreement. So everything's not set at zero. But unquestionably, and as John says, unfortunately, it'll be those who have the least room to survive a harsh economic climate are always the ones to suffer. I don't think, well, I know Boris doesn't have the power to close the Scottish Parliament. That's established by an act of the United Kingdom Parliament. He can't overturn that. He's elected Prime Minister by the Conservative Party, which many people think is appalling. But we don't elect Prime Ministers in Great Britain. We elect Members of Parliament. And so until Boris has proven not to have the support of Parliament, then he stays as Prime Minister. And it's unfortunate. People would rather have a presidential system here, but we haven't got one. So we have to live with what we've got. From a personal point of view, I think I've never known politics, and I've been involved in politics for 51 years now. Mm-hmm. I've never known it be as bitter and unpleasant and divisive amongst friends and families, not just political opponents. I mean, I've spent my life arguing politics with people like John. And in the past, we've respected that we differ about economics and things, but now people feel it really personally. So he's right, life is very hard.
Derek, we're running out of time. If you allow me, I'll give 1 minute also to John. Yeah. John, let's have your take on this. What is President Trump's agenda for the UK?
Well, it's very simple. He sees Britain as a dripping roast of opportunity for US corporations. We know that Trump despises multilateral trading blocks and institutions such as the EU, and he's gone out of his way to undermine them since he came to power in Washington in 2016. And so this is a great day for him. Britain will not be independent, despite the claims of the supporters of Brexit. It will not be independent. It will be even more dependent on Washington and on Washington's largesse. And as everybody knows, only the strong can reach agreement, and only equals can compromise. And we will not be equal when it comes to agreeing a trade deal with Washington in this post-Brexit climate. And Trump will drive a hard bargain. And I really do worry for the future of the NHS, despite Boris Johnson's assurances to the contrary that the NHS is safe. I don't think it is safe. I think this will be seen as a dripping roast for American corporations, healthcare corporations, and they will want to get their hands and break it up. And so, as I say, I really do fear for the future of this country as a consequence of this project.
Okay, we're out of time. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much, Derek Conway, journalist and former British MP, joining us from London, and John White, journalist and political commentator, who joined us out of Edinburgh. And thank you for watching this debate. We'll see you next time.